Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Hello, I'm Tim Schwartz.
And I'm Sean Preece.
Hello and welcome to RNIB Tech Talk. That's right, this is the show where everything's made up and the points don't matter. That's right, the points are like the sugar content of biscuits to Stephen Scott. I'll be your host for this week's episode of Tech Talk. My name is Tim Schwartz, a.k.a. Professor Pat Pending. And as you might have noticed, Stephen Scott, a.k.a. Dick Dastardly, is not with us this week, but hopefully he'll return next week. But his trusty sidekick, Sean Muttley Preece, is joining me once again. Hello, Sean.
Now, let's dissect this a little bit. Hello, Tim, by the way. So I got a terrible, nasty tweet saying that I sound like Muttley every episode because of my laugh. Now, that's discrimination, yes. My friend. That's cyberbullying, if nothing else. And you've gone and run with it.
And that's why you don't like social media, but we'll get to that later in the show. But yes, you did receive a lovely tweet talking about how you sound like Muttley when you giggle and laugh. And you, of course, very quickly threw Stephen under the bus and said, well, if I'm Muttley, he's Dick Dastardly. And, of course, we had a bit of a debate on who the world I would be. So, yeah, we came up with Professor Pat Pending. So if anybody has any other thoughts about that, comments, complaints, let us know. But yes, we do sometimes feel around here like we are just reenacting the wacky races.
With less driving, obviously.
With less driving, obviously, because that would be even more wacky and dangerous. Oh my gosh, you don't want us driving. This week, however, we have a whole lot of things to get to, Sean. Later on, we're going to be hearing from Gary Price, who's going to tell us about the Speak On Media Suite. And then later on in the news, Sean, we have a whole lot of stories concerning technology and shopping. I know your favorite topic in the whole wide world.
Oh, I love shopping. Online shopping, in particular, is amazing. Joy, a boon, a miracle, and I love it. But you'll have to wait and see what my real opinion is a little later on in the show.
Yes, tell us what you really think, Sean. So stay tuned for that coming up later in the show. And also later on in the news, we're going to share a couple of stories concerning technology and social media. So all that and more coming up on this week's Tech Talk. Now, Sean, before we get to all of that this week, speaking of social media, which I love that this conversation is about to be had, not because we're going to talk about technology and social media and how it relates to people in the blind and visually impaired community. What I love about this is that you, of all people who don't like social media, don't understand social media, you're not thrilled about social media, this topic was your idea.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? I believe that social media and communication apps are really important and really useful, especially if you're visually impaired. Because let's be honest here, being visually impaired or blind can bring with it issues such as isolation or loneliness, you know, not being able to interact socially as much as you maybe used to or could do if you were sighted. We don't always like to talk about it, but these are common issues. I know I've gone a bit deep and serious already.
That didn't take long. Wow.
Yeah, but no, it really is an issue. And look, this came about because with the recent Skype news, you know, with Skype Classic disappearing and then Microsoft saying, it's okay, we'll keep it around for a bit longer. It really brought it home how many people, you know, use and even rely on Skype and apps like this. Of course, there's things like Zello, Varel, Twitter, Facebook.
Yep.
All these platforms out there, and they can really help get information and help to people. And, well, basically, I thought, you know, it may be a good idea to take a look at the options that are out there. There's better options than Skype.
There are definitely a lot of better options out there because, as we know, Skype keeps breaking itself and then fixing itself, and it's back and forth love-hate relationship with Skype. As you said, overall, it's a great program, but just now they're looking at getting accessibility features back in. They've just now added call recording. So it's just, yeah, I love to hate Skype sometimes. But there are many other options out there for social media. And I mean, you and I, Sean, especially you, are old enough to remember way back in the ICU. Well, you're a little older than me. I'm on your heels a little bit. But back in the day when we had ICQ, here in the States, we had, of course, America Online. We had AOL with chat rooms and instant messages. Of course, we had, you know, instant messenger around the world later on. And then you had Yahoo Messenger. So you were able to either group or individually chat with people and just text. You had chat rooms, of course. I remember the first time I ever went into a Yahoo chat room, and then they had Yahoo voice chat rooms, which seemed like such a long time ago. It seems like a modern thing that it's amazing it was actually available 20 years ago, where you could actually chat with your voice. But you had those things within the last, say, 20, 25 years. And it's amazing where it's come to now, because we have things, like you said, like Twitter and Facebook and programs like Skype or even Zoom, which we both really like a lot and use quite a bit now. And the blind community, blind and visually impaired community, has adopted a lot of these when they're more simple to use, I think is maybe a fair thing to say. And I don't mean simple as far as like not techie or dumbed down. What I mean is, things like Twitter are big in the blind and visually impaired community because you're just dealing with text. There's not a whole lot of bells and whistles. You can get into communities, get into lists, and you can filter out. No, not always. It's not so easy to filter out some of the bad stuff. And there are definitely bad things about social media, and we'll get to that. But Twitter is just simple. You post text, you read text, and there may be some links and hashtags, but for the most part, you're sending and receiving text information with groups of people or individual people. The same very simple interaction can be said for programs like Zello or VoRail, and we'll get to those in a moment as well. But those are audio-based, not text-based, but they're the same idea when it comes to easily sharing information. So instead of just sending a brief text of information back and forth, you're sending your voice back and forth on things like Zello and VoRail, and very similar way to Facebook. Although, like you said, Facebook's got so many other options that can make it either much more difficult or just more advanced as far as things you can do, but you don't have to use all of those things. And that's what we want to talk about today, Sean, is what are these options? What's available? What's accessible? What's nice and easy to use? What's a little maybe too scary to use? So if you were to use social media, Sean, if you had to pick one thing that you would enjoy or do enjoy, what would that be?
No, that's a good question. Now, let me just say before we get further into it, there's obviously a distinction between social media and communication apps. Zello, sure. Skype, Zoom, you know, that's more communication. But there is a bit of a crossover there in some cases, especially with Facebook, where you've got Facebook Messenger with communication as well. So there is a bit of a crossover there. But I've got to say, I still do really like Twitter. It is nice and easy to cope with. I am sounding so old, aren't I? But it is, you know, I know exactly. You know, I'd like something, I retweet something, or I reply to something. It's nice and easy. Now, the reason I did fall off Twitter, and you know, it wasn't really a conscious decision, oh, I'm going to go digital detox and come off social media. There were time, I got a terrible, terrible habit of feeling so guilty if I don't get back to someone straight away, you know, and I've got a terrible habit of forgetting about things. My age, again, that's my excuse for everything. It's like playing the blind card. I'm blind and old, so I'm all right. But yeah, look.
Get off my lawn. I can't see you, but I know you're there. Get off my lawn.
I can hear you. Twitter is so good. I look at Twitter as more of my news feed. You know, if you want any breaking stories, you're going to find it on Twitter. Now, sorry, going back to the reason I sort of fell away from Twitter, really, is I did find it a little bit too much sometimes. And a lot of the stories you will see multiple times, obviously, you know, down to retweets, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I find it more and more difficult to customize it to what I wanted to see. Now, I'm sure that's down to my limitations in the app. You know, I'm sure there's things like lists, and I'm sure you can block certain people. But yeah, I don't want to block it. I just don't want to see all those feeds in my timeline all the time. So I just found that I was getting a bit bombarded sometimes. And I thought, you know what? I can't keep up. So I did drop off Twitter. But I mean, I do think it's, as a social media, as a way of getting information, I do think it's great, and I am trying to get back on there.
Well, I think it's really good news, because I know Stephen and I share things occasionally. I probably more than Stephen, but yeah, you definitely are MIA when it comes to Twitter here the last 6 months or a year, so
it'd
be nice to see you back out there again, Sean. But no, I think you're right. I think for ease of use and getting information, especially getting your news, if you pick the right sources, and that's what it comes down to, is customizing your experience, whether you're blind or not, whatever social media platform you're using, it comes down to customizing your experience. And you're right, you can join lists on Twitter, which I really enjoy. You can create your own list, so you can only see, of the hundreds of people you might be following on Twitter, you can only maybe see certain people or certain types of people. I, for instance, have a list that I've comprised of blind podcasters. So if I want to see what other blind podcasters are talking about out there, I can see their tweets right there in that list. I have certain news lists that I've put together so I can get news straight away rather than having to scroll through endless pages of my feed trying to find the news and things like that. So to, you know, kind of compartmentalize the information that you get on something like Twitter, the list can be very helpful. And then blocking. And I think that's the first thing that I tell anybody when they're getting on social media, is block, mute, unfollow, unfriend, whatever they call it on the platform you're using. That can be your friend sometimes, because people talk about how social media, especially Twitter, can be toxic. But the first thing I always say is use the block, unfriend, unfollow, mute, whatever button it's called in that particular social media platform. Use it, because that can be your friend. It is a toxic environment, or can be, but if you take that time to make lists and follow the right places and people and use that block / mute / unfriend, unfollow, you know, all those types of buttons that they call them, you can tailor the experience to be a lot better. You're still going to get some things that come through that are toxic that you don't want to necessarily see or hear, but you can amend that over time. And I think that, again, like I said, is the first thing that I always tell people: make the experience your own.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And that's what it almost seems impolite to, I'm going to unfollow you. I feel guilty about it again, but yeah, you are right. Because otherwise it just gets, as I said, it just gets too much. And it's hard to find the information you actually want amongst this ocean of tweets.
I used to feel the same way, Sean, when it came to the politeness of unfollowing somebody, especially on Facebook, because if you unfollow them, they don't necessarily know that you did, but you don't see them in your feed. So you can still be friends with them, but just unfollow them and you don't see them for that time, or you can even mute them for 30 days or something like that now. And
wow, that's golden information. I'm going to use that one.
Yeah, that's a new one that they put in here recently, where if you just don't want to hear somebody for 30 days, say there's an election going on and you just can't hear one more comment about what they have to say about whatever, you know, politically or whatever. Not that I've used it for that, but but you can mute the person for up to 30 days, and you can extend that if you want, or just unfollow them. And I used to be in the same camp as you, Sean, where I'd feel kind of odd about that, like it was impolite. And then, well, I used it a couple times and realized, oh, this is nice. It's nice and quiet around here. It's peaceful. This is wonderful.
The power went to his head.
The power went to my head. Well, then I realized, you know, some, especially on Facebook, you can't do this as well with other social media platforms, but especially on Facebook, you can categorize things by close friends, acquaintances, family, or even places that you've been. If you went to university and you have other people in your friends list that went to the same university, you can, you know, put them in that kind of a category. And you can customize each one of those categories to show or not show whatever you want it to be to those people or from those people. There's also a restricted area. So if you say, for instance, in your case, Sean, you have a whole lot of fans, you know, all the shows that you do and podcasts you do, all your fans wanting to be friends with you on Facebook, you could hit a restricted button that they only see your public posts or whatever you designate for that restricted area. So they don't see the private things that you share, which, if you were sharing any of them, when you were sharing them, well, we won't go there. But you can restrict certain people's access to what they can see. And again, I think those are the most important features when you get started with any social media application or platform. Learn what your options are. Learn what things you can do, whether it comes to blocking people, making special lists, special categories of people, because that really, like I said before, is going to help kind of form your experience. And we talk about that a lot. I know we briefly mentioned this, but apps like Zello and VoRail that aren't a text social media platform necessarily, although an argument could be made, like you said earlier, that they are kind of a hybrid of social media slash communications apps, because you are using your voice, you are talking with other people and communicating with other people, but in a social networking kind of a way. And even with Zello, you can turn a channel on or off. You don't have to friend a person. You can block a person. On VoRail, of course, you have the mute button, which everybody likes to say, mute button is your friend. You put people in that mute bin. And so even places like that, you can mold and craft your experience. And especially when there's a voice there, when you're actually hearing the audio of people, I think that's important to know what those options are.
Yeah, I have slight concerns over Facebook and the amount of information people can gain on someone from that. The amount of information, like, you know, you could see people's family members and things like that. I know there's got to be ways to restrict that, as you said, but that does worry me a little, and it does scare me off.
Well, I think, Sean, it sounds like it's time for you and I to do a Facebook intervention at some point. So we're going to have to do that off the air sometime, because thankfully, Facebook and Twitter and so many other social media platforms, especially in the light earlier this year of GDPR in Europe, Facebook has been forced, like all these companies have been forced, to update their privacy settings, their terms of service, as we all received tons and tons of emails earlier this year after GDPR went into effect. Facebook has really, I think, gone above and beyond when it comes to privacy settings, those personal settings. I actually spent one night, probably a month or so ago, going through every single privacy setting that they've added now. And it probably took me maybe a half an hour, maybe not that long.
Party guy, Tim.
What?
How did you spend your Saturday night? Well, I went through my Facebook privacy settings. Whoa, yeah, steady night.
I'm in the fast lane. That's me. But I had read about some of the updates that they had done, and I'm like, okay, I'll take a look here and see what they've done. And I was actually very happily impressed, because you can now go in and customize so many things and make the experience so much better, where you can turn certain things off, turn certain things on, and really customize the experience. And I really like what they've done when it comes to that, because as I said, with the restricted mode and some of the other things, you can say whether you want a certain category of people to see your birthday or see your family members' names, or to see your friends for that matter, to see what other friends you have, whether you want them to see where you live, the town that you live in, or where you went to school. All of those things can be turned on, can be turned off. You can flag them to only be seen by either your closest friends or your acquaintances, family members, like I said before, all those different categories, or just restrict it altogether. So the only things they see is, okay, that you exist and that you have some public posts, which I do have set up for some people. So thankfully you can make that decision and say, oh, well, this person, yeah, they're a friend, but they're more of an acquaintance. They don't know where I live, and I don't want them to know where I live. So I'm going to flag acquaintances to not know that I live in this particular town. My close friends, sure, but not my acquaintances, or not my family members, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, just depends on how you want to do that. And so Facebook's given you those tools. So I think that if you dove into that a little bit more, Sean, you know, spend your Saturday night that way, you know, have a drink, have a snack, you know, open up some biscuits and, you know, take a look.
Go through your Facebook privacy settings. Yeah, it sounds like a dream.
Go through your Facebook privacy settings. Yeah, it's a fun Saturday night. Absolutely. Who needs to go out and have a good time out of the house? Just set up those Facebook settings. And something else that we haven't really talked about, we talked about lists on Twitter, but Facebook has groups, which are very nice for the blind and visually impaired community, because there are groups for everything. If you want to know about Android devices or Apple devices or certain apps, or if you want to know more about literally anything, if soon, very, very soon, if you want to join a Life After Blindness group,
plug.
Just plug. Hey, it's been a while. I get one.
Yeah, that's
if you wanted to join a group like Life After Blindness, which you can find at lifeafterblindness.com, can.
He's pushing it.
It's not pushing it. I'm owed a few of those, I think. Anyway, you can join groups like that. See the website soon for details. And you can get within a community, within the community, if that makes sense. So yes, you've got your friends and your acquaintances and things like that, but you can join a group where there's people talking about a very specific topic or specific types of things revolving around that topic. And I really find the information you can find there, like the lists in Twitter, you can really drill down and get a much better experience using groups.
Yeah, I was so surprised how specific and targeted groups can get. Recently, look, I know we're going to have to wrap this up, so we're rambling on and on, but recently just moved to a new house and someone left the gate open. It was me. And the dog got out, and we lost the dog. And, of course, everyone's running around the streets crying and looking for the dog. And I'm wandering around with a lead, shouting his name. And he actually gone to a house just three doors up. So he was in there. But someone was out looking around as well and saw me with an empty lead and said, "Have you lost a dog?" "Yes, I have." And they had it. But the thing is that it was already all over Facebook. There was a, where I live, the community where I live, there was a lost pets of, you know, and the name of where I live on Facebook. His picture was up there and he already had some responses. It was like, this is amazing. The dog's been lost 2-3 hours and already he's all over the Facebook. I didn't even know that group existed, but it was there. I mean, how targeted, how specific can you get? It was great.
It was great. I actually remember that because I saw it. You never did at the time, but I did because I commented to your partner because she was all upset talking about how the dog was lost and all these other people were commenting and sharing. And you actually had a really good support group, not just on Facebook, but in real life of all these people trying to find your dog. And here I am in the States going, "Oh, I feel so helpless, but yeah, I'll offer my verbal support." But yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, you see, that's Black Labradors. Oh, terrible. We were devastated.
Yeah, yes,
anyway,
it was every time.
Yeah, so that's the every social time. Media. I just quickly do want to mention Zello. That's Z-E-L-L-O. It's I'd loved it. This is where I started podcasting from. This is where I met so many people. It's basically a walkie-talkie app. It is on Android. I've got it on my Amazon Fire tablet. I've got it on iOS. It's even on PC, not on Mac, sadly. But it is a walkie-talkie app. It's very much, you know, press to talk and real life conversations. But the good thing about it is you can set up a channel. Also, it's just like a group. So you could set up a channel, call it whatever you want, you know, Tech Talk. And anyone can come in, search for it, join that channel and talk in real time to someone on there. It's just a great app. Now, recently it has died down. There was a load of interest in this when it was first released. And of course, like anything, it gets lots of interest and then dies down. But still,
everybody moved the Vorel.
And yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. But still, it is a great app. It's accessible. And I really do like Zello.
And in summing up this conversation, Sean, that's the one big thing I want to get across to everybody is that these apps in today's social media market, they are accessible. Things like Zello and Vorail, if you want to use your voice, where Zello is the walkie-talkie real-time app. Vorail is kind of a time-shifted conversation with audio. So you post a question in audio, you get audio responses. They are real-time as they're posted, but they're not walkie-talkie immediately back and forth like Zello. But then you have, of course, your Twitters and your Facebooks and all these other things. Heck, I think even MySpace here in the States is trying to make a comeback, although I wouldn't suggest it, but because it's a little less accessible than the others. But all of these, like I said, have accessibility teams. They're very good about accessibility, especially apps like Zello and Vorail, who really weren't intended for the blind, but have been made accessible by their developers. Really, honestly, just as good as the big companies like Facebook and Twitter. So yeah, I strongly encourage people to take a look, especially Zello, like you said, because you can not only create a channel, but you can search for a channel. So if you want to search for the term blindness, or iPhone or Android or whatever it might be.
Yep.
Matter of fact, I think I created a I got to do it again. I created a Life After Blindness channel there a long time ago, but I never did anything with it. I've created it. It's there, but I've never really done anything. I know you have a channel that you run and there's other channels that we belong to. So yeah, to search for topics that way is really nice. And just to be able to meet other people and talk with people, like-minded people. And like you said, you got started on podcasting and met a lot of people in that space on Zello. You and I officially formally met on Vorail. So social media like those, you know, can be very helpful in networking and finding new people.
Funnily enough, that's as soon as I met you. I think that's when I said I'm not going on social media anymore. I'm not saying there's a correlation there.
No correlation there at all, huh? I was like, oh, that Tim guy, he had too many questions. He was just too problematic. I can't go on social media anymore if they're all going to be like him. Yeah.
But Vorail is a good app as well, I've got to say, especially if you've got a question to ask, if you've got a problem with something. It's very much audio message board, if you think of it like that. So you simply load it up, record a message, give it a title, and it will get posted up there. Everyone can browse it and they can respond to it. Works really well. It's a nice app. Now, I will say with any of these, of course, we all know about Facebook and Twitter. There is there is elements on there. There's some negativity, there's some toxicity. You can't control always what other people say. So you have got to be careful and be aware of that. But in general, yeah, I think it's a really good resource to have. That's VORAIL. That's VORAIL.
And any of these, of course, you can search for us. You can find Stephen, myself, and Sean. You can look under our names, or we have other terms. You can look for at The Blurred Nerd for Sean, at Tech Talker Steve for Stephen. On Twitter, I'm at Tim Schwartz 5. And then, of course, just look for our names on anything else, on Zello, on VORAIL. You can just find us by our names. We're usually hanging out around there. And I would mention, we're going to wrap this up and move on to our next piece, but some honorable mentions that we didn't get to. Lately, there's a couple of new popular things in this space, especially with the VI community. One of those is called Discussion Fairy. I haven't personally used that myself, but I hear it's pretty good, very similar to VORAIL in that sense. And then this new message board group called group.io on the web. I've noticed a lot of companies especially using this for discussion groups, and it is accessible. So those are some honorable mentions to check out as well.
Excellent. I expect to see you all online. Anyway, now it's time for some of your audio. Listener Gary Price has sent us a demo of some software called Speakon Media Suite. If you want a totally, and I mean totally accessible media player for Windows, listen to this.
Hi there, Tech Talk. It's me, Gary Price here. I'm just doing this recording for you of Speakon Media Suite. I'm on my desktop at the moment, and I'm just going to highlight it.
Speakon Media Suite 11.16.
Now, I should say that for this program to work properly, you need to have Java installed. But once that's installed, you don't need to worry about it, because that's what it's written in Java, you see. And what I am also going to say is that by default, it uses eSpeak. You can change it, and I will show you how to do that. But I am just going to pre-warn you of that, because eSpeak is pretty robotic, should I say. I'm going to press enter now and launch it.
Speakon Media Suite. Press F1 for context sensitive help menu. Manage a task. Available media tasks list. CV1.7. Ready.
So, as you just heard, it starts off in the manager task. And this is like your main launch point, as it were. So if I just use the down arrow key now.
Podcast 2.7. Music 3.7. TuneIn Radio 4.7. Other Media 5.7. Audio Books 6.7. Text Publications 7.7. 1.7.
So I just pressed the home key to get back to the top of the list. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to change my synthesizer to Sappy 5, because that's better. So I'm going to go into the main menu with the Alt key.
Main menu, shutdown, Speakon Media Suite, Alt plus F4, menu item.
Now, your menus in Speakon are different to Windows. They're vertical rather than left-right, as it were, so up and down, if that makes sense. So, if I down arrow once,
global settings, submenu,
and then right arrow there,
synthesizer settings, menu item,
and that's where I need to go to change the synthesizer. So if I press enter there,
synthesizer settings, task, available synthesizers list, eSpeak, 1.3, tip, press the up and down arrow keys to scroll the list, press the select left bracket, enter right bracket key to select and test the synthesizer you want, select OK from the main menu to save the synthesizer you selected.
As you can tell, it gives you all the information there. Isaac has really thought about this from the ground up. So now if I down arrow to Sappy 5,
Microsoft Speech API version 5, common driver 2.3. Microsoft Speech API version 5, 3.3.
That's what I want. So I'm going to press enter there.
Please wait.
Microsoft Speech API version 5 synthesizer. To save your settings, select OK from the main menu. To cancel, select cancel from the main menu.
So now I go to the main menu.
Main menu. Okay, end task. Menu item.
And that's what we need.
Ending task. Manager task. Available media tasks list.
So now I'm going to show you how to add some music into your library, as it were.
Podcast, 2 of 7. Music, 3 of 7.
So, press enter there.
Music task. Player. Loading last media played. Nothing to play. Ready.
So, I'm in the player at the moment, so I'm going to tab forward.
Library, media tree. Music, playable directory, 1 of 1.
Now, at the moment, even though it says that, there's nothing in there at the moment. So, I'm going to go into the main menu now with the
main
OK.
Menu. End task, return to manager. Control plus F4. Menu item. File. Submenu. Edit. Submenu. Play. Submenu. Navigation. Submenu. Settings. Submenu. Library music. Add or remove folder locations. Menu item.
That's what we want.
Use the help menu F1 for information on this task and controls. Library directory manager task. Music. Folder locations list. List empty.
So we tab forward.
Folders tree. Level 0. C. 1 of 2.
Yeah.
Level 1. $recycle.bin. Users. Level 2. Gary. Level. No more levels. 3. Queen. 20 of 24.
And that's what I copied over. So press enter there.
Folder location added successfully to the music library directory. To confirm your added folders, select OK from the menu.
So that's what we do.
Main menu. OK, end task, return to manager. Menu item. Manager task. Available media tasks list. Music, 1 of 7.
And do you see what I mean? Now it's put music straight at the top. Because that's the last one that I used. So all I've got to do now is just go into there with the enter key.
Music task. Player. Loading last media played. Nothing to play. Ready.
So tab forward.
Library, media tree. Music, playable directory, 1 of 1.
And now we've added something in there, we can actually expand that with the right arrow key.
Level 1. Greatest Hits I, playable directory, 1 of 3.
And now if I press enter there.
Searching directory dot dot dot. Player. First media. Bohemian Rhapsody. 1 of 17.
There you go. And if you wanna turn your volume up and down, that's done with F8 will turn it up and F7 will turn it down. And you can do the same thing with your speech. F5 and F6. And if you get a phone call and you're listening to something, all you've got to do is just press enter. And that's paused it.
Audio louder.
So I can put it up, you see, if I want to.
Audio louder, maximum.
There you go. I mean, obviously, you know, if that's too loud, I can just turn it down with F7.
Audio softer. Audio softer.
Like that. So now, if I do Control and F4.
Manager task. Available media tasks list. Music, 1 of 7. CD, 2 of 7. Podcast, 3 of 7. Podcast task. Player. Loading last media played. Nothing to play. Ready.
There's actually a visually impaired section which you can actually add. You go again into the main menu.
Main menu. Shut down speak on media suite. Alt plus F4. Menu item. Global settings. Tools. Add plug INS. Menu item.
Add plugins, that's it.
Looking for source on the internet, please wait. Add plug INS task. Plug INS available to install checklist. Unchecked. Via radio and podcast. Visually impaired services radio and podcast. 1 of 3. Tip. Press the up and down arrow keys to scroll the list. Press the select, left bracket, enter right bracket, key to toggle check or uncheck, check adds a plugin.
Yeah, so that's what I want to do.
Checked. VI radio and podcast, visually impaired services radio and podcast, 1 of 3. Unchecked. VI services and of news agent audio, visually impaired services, UK and of news agent audio newspapers and magazines. Subscription to an of news agent audio required, 2 of 3. Unchecked. VI services and of news agent e-text, visually impaired services, UK and of news agent e-text newspapers and magazines. Subscription to an of news agent e-text required, 3 of 3. Main menu. Okay, add plug INS, end task. Adding plug INS from the internet, this may take a few moments. Plug INS added successfully. Speak on media suite will shut down. Start it again for these changes to take effect. Shutting down speak on media suite.
So, now if I go back into speak on now.
Speak on media suite.
Use the manager's tools submenu to add and remove plugins. Manager task. Available media tasks list. Podcast. 1 of 9. Ready. VI Radio, 9 of 9. VI Podcast, 8 of 9. VI Podcast task. Player. Loading last media played. Nothing to play. Ready. Library. Template. Received file. Favorites. All feeds. Internet done. Connecting .. Level 2. Community. Internet. Commercial. Community, interconnecting .. Level 3, ACB radio main menu, Google Blind Tech, Blind Access Journal, Apple Viz Podcast, Talking Computers, NV Access, 6 of 11. Infosound, 7, BBC, Inter, BBC, Ouch, the Anup Connect Radio, Internet Directory, Tech Talk, 4 of 5.
And now if I press enter there.
Player. Connecting ..
Downloading, 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3.
And there's your tech talk, as it were.
Welcome to Tech Talk.
So I can pause that. I mean, if I wanted to download that particular episode, I just do Control, Shift, and Return.
Download added to queue. Downloads complete.
There you go. Anyway, I hope this demo's been useful, as it were. I really hope that people will actually download it and check it out. Because, like I say, it is a learning curve because there's no visual aspect to it. It's all done with the keyboard, as it were. But once you actually get used to the interface, it's just a dream to work with.
Thanks, Gary. Great demo. I've got to say, if someone had just told me about this software, I probably wouldn't have been that interested. But actually hearing Gary use it there and demo it, I am quite interested in it. A totally accessible, audio-only media player. You know, you could play your music, your podcasts, your CDs, audiobooks, and text files even. Yeah, I'm definitely going to try this one out. You'll be able to find it on www.speakon.org.uk. Oh, and the thing about installing Java at the start had me slightly worried, but MediaSuite will install that as part of its installation process anyway, so it's nothing you really need to worry about.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sean. Just hearing about this before this demo, I wouldn't be too sure that I would use it, but then actually hearing it being used, like you said, it really is a nice, accessible way to access podcasts. Although, that being said, I want to dive into it and take a look, because I don't know, is Life After Blindness available within Speak On MediaSuite?
Oh, another plug.
Well, you know.
Are we going to have to change the name of this show? That's enough now. That's it. Your final warning.
The cat's away, the mice will play. we'll see if I can get it in one more time. Anyway, I think it's time for the news.
News from the internet.
That's right. It is time for the news. And Sean, picking up on our conversation earlier about social media networks, there's a story coming out of the EU. Once again, another directive from the EU. And this time it's taking some of the directives they had earlier this year a little bit further. So earlier this year, of course, we had GDPR and we all know what it was involved there. And there was a voluntary directive back then. I know that kind of sounds funny, but it was a directive, but it was also voluntary, where social media platforms would want to remove any type of terrorist activity or posts about terrorism within about an hour of it being posted. And again, like I said, earlier this year, it was a voluntary act to be taken on the side of the social media platforms. Now the European Union is saying, okay, enough is enough. No more volunteer. We are saying you have to do this. We don't care what size of social media you are. We don't care who you are. If you're a big, huge, multi-billion dollar company or just a small mom and pop website, if you have anything about terrorism on your site, you have 1 hour to get it down or you may face penalties and fines. So, Sean, what say you?
Gut reaction is great. Of course, we don't want anything, any terrorist propaganda out on the social media. Of course, we want that down as soon as possible. And the important thing to note here is that they have an hour from the moment it's flagged. So at the moment it's reported to them and they're made aware of it, they need to get rid of that within the hour. Otherwise, with this new legislation, they are at risk of being fined. So if you just take it at that, yeah, of course, I don't think anyone's going to argue with it. The grey areas and the problems come in is, well, what is terrorist? You know, what would you class as terrorist? I think there's loads of examples out there where you can, it's black and white. Okay, that is too much. But we'll have to see how this is implemented and, you know, what content they start targeting. But yeah, I mean, If I take it at face value, I think, of course, this is a fantastic idea. There are problems on the technical side with smaller companies not having, you know, teams of people able to deal with something in an hour of it being flagged. You know, the big companies like the Facebooks, like the Twitter, of course, should be able to deal with this. But even then, we're talking how many posts are put up every minute, every second. You know, millions, billions of posts that need to be sorted through. Of course, there's going to be software and artificial intelligence to scan these. But at some point, a human has got to make that decision. There is that danger of it going too far and the artificial intelligence just says, well, why take the risk? If it's got a certain keyword in it, I'm deleting it. And there could be problems with that. But, you know, in general, yeah, of course, fantastic idea.
Yeah, I think that's right. Something has to be done because, especially the last few years with all the propaganda, all the fake news, as we always tease about, all those kind of things that have happened, you've got to draw a line somewhere. And I agree with you that I think overall, generally, there's nothing bad about this at all. This is only a good thing. It's the implementation. It's the technical side of it that is going to be a question. Something I didn't mention earlier, we're talking about Facebook. You can now, for your own personal use, put in keywords that you can say, you know what, if this keyword comes up in my newsfeed, block that post. I don't want to see a post that has this particular keyword in it. And so I have to presume that behind the scenes, for at least the larger social media companies, online companies, they can have artificial intelligence, like you were talking about, that can be built in behind the scenes to do a similar kind of thing where it can say, you know what, look for this type of keyword or this wording or this propaganda and at least note it or at least highlight it. And then I don't know what happens from there. If, like you said, a person actually has to review all these thousands or maybe even millions worth of posts, God, that would be, you know, an incredible job to go through. But that being said, I think it's well worth it. But like you said, it is going to be tricky for your smaller social media platforms and outlets to have to police these things. But if they don't, then they will potentially face a fine. And we have seen something like this in the news recently, Sean, where the commentator Alex Jones has been having some problems with Facebook, Twitter, although Twitter has allowed him, I think. Well, they allowed him, then they disallowed him.
Suspended him.
Then they suspended him. Then they, yeah, they're kind of back and forth. I think Facebook maybe did a 30-day thing or somebody did. So people like him who are spreading his opinion out there. I'm not going to get too political, but people like Alex Jones spreading his version of facts and his opinion are being blocked on social media. And so it's kind of an extension of this, isn't it, Sean?
It is. Well, that was a big story recently. Yes. So the big thing was that Apple removed all his podcasts and his backlog of podcasts from their service. Then YouTube joined in and chucked him off there, and Facebook and Pinterest and, you know, everyone. And there was a bit of an outcry as to, well, how can you big tech companies in Silicon Valley, suddenly you're our censors, you're our censorship, you're deciding what's good, what's bad. Yeah, there is a discussion to be had about free speech versus hate speech, people's opinion, people's right to give their opinions. Personally, I think the guy's crazy, and I'm glad that he's off with such negativity. It's particularly what he said about Sandy Hook being all acted and not true and a hoax. Some things are too much. Some things are disgusting. And I think companies have got every right to say, you know what? You're using our service. We don't want your sort of content on there. But it is a complicated discussion to have.
Yeah, at the risk of being a little bit political, I will tiptoe into that as well and say, no, you're absolutely right. I think that the right decision was made here because he is absolutely bonkers. He's just totally he's totally off. So I agree. The things that a person says should have consequences, and you have to draw a line between your opinion and then just write out hate speech. And I think that's where the previous story with the terrorism information, if you can say without any kind of doubt at all, yes, this is terrorist information, this is terrorist activity being talked about, this needs to be blocked. And similarly, if you can say this is hate speech and this should be blocked, then I think that that's only a good thing. There's only good that can come out of getting rid of that. I do understand where people can say, well, what about free speech? People have the right to say what they want to say, post the things they want to post. That being said, you're on public forums that aren't owned by you. Apple Podcasts is not ours. Our content might be ours, but ultimately we're putting it on their platform, Twitter and Facebook the same. It'd be like running into a mall and screaming all kinds of hateful things. What do they say? Don't scream fire in a theater. Well, there's a reason for that, because you don't own that theater. That might be public and you might have free speech, but you also have to be careful on where you exercise that right. And if the theater, or in these cases, Apple Podcast or Facebook or Twitter, they have the right to say, no, this is our platform and we don't want this on our platform. So I think good on them to step in and say this, and good on the EU to say, you know what? We're not going to put up with terrorist activity on social media, at least in the UK, which brings us to another story, Sean, talking about free speech. Now, I have to admit, it's a little bit awkward to talk about, but we're going to do it. So recently...
We're grown up. We're adults, apparently.
We're grown up. We're all adults here. So, yeah, supposedly. I write in if you think we're adults. techtalk@rnab.org.uk. I don't know that I want to read those emails. Anyway, our next story kind of talks about free speech from the standpoint that the UK is trying to crack down on pornography sites, websites, and make it so that they not only can verify that someone is 18 years of age or older, but really truly confirm and verify. So it's more than just checking a box that says, yeah, I'm 18 years old, sure. And you check a box, you hit continue, and you have access, which for a lot of years, that's kind of what you've had to do. So I'm told.
I wouldn't know.
But I wouldn't know either. We'll have to ask Stephen when he comes back. So that being said, the UK is now saying, no, you need to confirm with people that are logging on to guarantee, whether that's verifying credit card information or some sort of verifying aspect of this person, that you can definitively say, yes, we have confirmed that they absolutely are over the age of 18. They are not a child, and they will be accessing this content legally as a person who's of age. And I say to that again is, I think, a very good thing. I think that anything that we can do to keep that type of thing out of, you know, the eyes and ears of children, I think is a good thing. Maybe even not a bad idea to keep it out of the eyes and ears of some adults, quite honestly. But that being said, there are people out there saying, well, but this violates our free speech.
For me, I totally agree. You know, look, this should be, just because it's the internet, it should be no different. Of course, there's going to be people saying that this is censorship and you know, this shouldn't be allowed. And there are organizations that are saying that. But by the end of this year, that will be something that commercial, it says, I don't quite understand that, but commercial pornography sites will have to have some sort of age verification check. Now, again, the technical issues behind this, what actually are they going to do to verify someone's age is tricky. Are we talking credit cards? In which case, then, the security issues, you know, that raises, again, keeping people's cards on file. I don't know. But As a general rule, I think it's far too easy, far too accessible. And this is one time when I'm saying accessibility isn't great. I think pornography on the internet and the ability for, you know, children to get to see something they shouldn't see, I think it's something that is a problem and needs to be sorted out. So I don't have a problem with this at all. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I can only agree with that, absolutely. As the father of a very young daughter, and I know you have two daughters yourself, Sean, I don't want it to be easy for children to be able to access these things. I want it to be difficult, if not impossible, have their access to that kind of content to be very, very difficult. So absolutely agree with you there.
Well, it's something that you can do accidentally, and I think that shouldn't be able to happen. Well, that's the excuse I keep giving. Anyway.
Yeah, you shouldn't be able to just stumble upon said content. I've actually done that on accident. I told you that off the air. We won't go into it, but I swear it was an accident. One time I did stumble upon some content and I'm like, how did I even get to this? So it's
OF4.
Yeah, exactly. OF4, clear the history. No, but I don't even understand why and how I should have been able to get access to what I heard so easily. It should not have been possible, in my opinion. So this is only a good thing. Now, Sean, as always, we're running a little short on time, so I know this is going to break your heart, but we're not going to have a lot of time to talk about shopping and technology this week. I know that you had your heart set on that, but...
No!
But very quickly, let's see if we can get to a couple of these before we have to go. So the first one we want to talk about is the difference between users of Apple Pay in the UK versus the users of Apple Pay in the United States, Sean.
Yeah, that's right. That comes out of a story that Apple Pay has I think it was 27% of people use Apple Pay in the UK.
That's right.
Versus how much was it in the US?
About 14%.
14%, which is still great numbers considering how relatively new Apple Pay is. I think this purely comes down, and I think it did mention this in the article that I read, it purely comes down to that here in the UK, contactless payment cards, chip and PIN, you know, everywhere has got it. I buy my bacon sandwich in the morning, I pay with my phone, contactless, it's a little butty shop. And in the US, it's far less widespread. I think it is changing now.
It is definitely changing now. Yeah, you guys have had that type of payment option for a good 10 years, not Apple Pay, but a form of this type of payment option outside of the internet for probably going on 10 years or so. And now it's all on the internet, and the US is catching up to that. Plus, you also have to remember, according to the article, about 85% of the people that use Apple Pay are outside of the United States. So I think that does balance it a little bit or off balance it a little bit because so many people outside of the US are using it. So the US is just still catching up to it. But I thought it was just an interesting kind of diverse take on Apple Pay that, you know, in the UK, you guys have been using technology like this for a while and you're used to it. It's kind of second nature. Whereas in the US, we're still catching up to it. But again, I agree with you. 27%, 14%, doesn't matter. I think it's still a pretty good number for Apple.
Apple Pay is amazing. Anything like that. I mean, I haven't used Android Pay, but I'm assuming that's just as good. But yeah, it's so convenient. I haven't carried cash on me in so long. Everything's just, you know, a fingerprint and my phone. Perfect.
Agreed. Yeah, I rarely ever carry cash anymore between my phone or my Apple Watch. Just swipe or put the fingerprint and away you go. Well, speaking of streamlining the shopping experience, Sean, this next story about tech and shopping is awesome and cool and creepy all at the same time. So we know Amazon in Seattle, Washington has a salesperson-less store where you walk in, there might be one person to greet you at the door, and that's it. Well, now a company called Zipin has a store in San Francisco where they're trying the same thing. So the shelves are weighted, so it knows as soon as you pick something up off the shelf, it knows that the weight of that item is now gone. There's cameras all over the place. They're scanning devices, and you walk in, I believe you scan in with a UPC code or something like that, or some sort of barcode at the store opening and the store front. front with a person, and then that's the last person you see, the only person you see, because the rest of your shopping experience is cataloged by cameras and scanners and weights and all kinds of things.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know how I feel about this one. I should be, yay, less people to deal with. Fantastic. But I think the technology behind it is just so mind-blowing. It's, how do they know? They just must be watching everything I do. It is slightly creepy. I don't know. The tech side of it is really interesting, and it probably will take off. But I don't know. It just seems so hard to see how people are not just going to run in, grab everything off the shelf and run out again.
Well, this particular article, I don't know how Amazon does it, but this particular store, you have to go through a turnstile. There is kind of a door and then another door and then that one person kind of standing guard there to
give you... No, it's like prison. Forget it. I'm not interested.
Well, but you do have that person there offering you the QR code as you walk in, and then you have to go through that turnstile to be counted through the door. So, I mean, that part does seem a little bit maybe too much security. That being said, it also prevents people from doing exactly what you just said, of rushing in, grabbing everything off the shelves, and running back out again. I think that it's an intriguing idea because they did say that tracking inventory and costs and things like that is actually more close to 100% accurate as opposed to having staff count things and doing inventory. So as soon as something is taken off the shelf, it tells the distributor immediately, oh, that item was sold. I know I need to send them another one. So it can all be done electronically, and it's a much more efficient way to do business, but it is a lot less personal way to do business. And as somebody who worked in computer sales many years ago when I was in college, there's something to be said for that personal sales relationship. Although a lot of stores nowadays, you go in and you can't find a salesperson for your life, to save your life. So maybe this is the next best step because we can't find salespeople anyway. So why not do this? So anyway, I just thought it was an intriguing story. It's interesting that this might be the future of our shopping experience.
Well, you can't deny that the high street is in trouble. Bricks and mortar stores need to do something to try and fight back against online shopping. So maybe this is the answer, but I don't think you're going to see this in your local high street anytime soon.
I think that's right. And of course, only time will tell, but this very possibly could be the answer to the online shopping boom that we've experienced the last many years, and really decades for that matter. And really the other side of the coin is to see if the consumers and shoppers will actually adopt this over time. Well, Sean, unfortunately, we've come to the end of another episode of R&B Tech Talk. I want to thank you for joining me this hour and helping me out. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
And of course, I want to thank all of you, the listeners out there, for taking the time to listen to us being silly and banter about technology. If you have any questions or comments for us, we'd love to hear from you. Please send your emails to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And while you're online, hey, why not visit lifeafterblindness.com. For the seemingly always on holiday Stephen Dick Dastardly Scott, for Sean Mutley Priest, and myself, Tim, Professor Pat Pending Schwartz, we'll see you back here next week on R&B Tech Talk. Take care, everybody.